Bill, you get your bonus yet?
Good news. Happy hour starting early. It's the bonus hour.
Bonus.
Of the Fan Happy Hour with Luke Anderson.
How did you get a bonus?
On the Fan Sports Network, 105.1 and 1080. The Fan.
I cut out bonuses this year.
And it starts now.
Hey, hey, hey! Happy Hump Day, all you beautiful radio listeners. Hope you are having a wonderful start to your afternoon. Joining me again for the bonus hour, the one and only Dusty Hera.
What's up, Luke?
Not much.
How are you feeling? How are you feeling after one day?
I will say that the praise that was heaped upon me from all different directions was fantastic. I was told that I looked pretty good on the YouTube. I was told that I sounded pretty good. But one of the best compliments I got yesterday was as I left the studio, I got a compliment on how I and the studio smelled from one Jason Sakanik.
Yeah, he was really high on your scent.
Yeah.
He loves the scent of Luke Anderson.
Well, I miss your musk.
Yeah. Sex Panther.
Yeah, that's right. So
Luke Anderson.
So I will take the compliments in all different senses. So yeah. I mean, I thought if I look okay on YouTube, fine. If I sound pretty good on the radio, great. I didn't expect to have a smell compliment.
Well, let's face it, it's all due to your award-winning producer.
The smell?
You get all the scent credit?
No, everything good here is
all the food. Before the show.
Everything good here is due to me.
Well, in fairness, I did say to you, Jeffrey Rust, before the show started, I think I said it on air yesterday, and I said it before the show, everything that goes wrong is your fault, so you know what? Everything that goes right, I think you should get credit for.
It's the facts of life. You take the good, you take the bad.
Listen, nobody can even hear me if
you're
not there.
You take them both, and there you have the facts of life.
You know, but a great show.
Thank you.
Futurama.
Oh, yeah.
Is a great show. They had, you remember they had the smelloscope?
They did.
And they had smell-o-vision on the TV.
Yeah.
That may be the next iteration. First we go FM.
Next?
It only took us 35 years.
Okay,
and then... In the next 35, I think that's the next mission.
So what is that? 2060. Get ready for the Fan and Smell-O-Vision.
You're damn right. Dude, loved that show.
Can I just say the maybe the best final episode? The way that they decided, they're like, do you remember the final episode of Futurama?
I don't.
Well, I guess that's not fair because they brought it back on Hulu. The way that they did the original final episode was they had Fry falling from a building holding a device that could reset him essentially to the first episode.
I do remember
this. And he had the choice to push it or not. But what a way to be like, it's not over.
Yeah.
I thought it was great. Brilliant.
That is.
And it was very Futurama.
Brilliant.
And the whole thing. So yeah, I will agree with you. Fantastic show. I did try to watch some of the reboot.
Not good.
I don't know. There's just something where you can't get the original vibe in any of the reboots.
No.
I just don't think it exists, so let's stop trying.
Well, here's the thing. This is what happens in any of these reboots is that we watch them at such a different time in our life.
Yeah, well, and I won't say anything against the reboots on movies because we will talk Naked Gun later, but
that's what I'm
for TV.
About.
So, for TV reboots.
But here's the thing is that when you watch them at a formative time in your life, right? Or whatever time a show comes across your path or a movie.
Yep.
You have such a different view of your life experiences, your sense of humor adapts and evolves over time. Ooh. So then you go back and you're like, you know what? This was great. Yeah. I'm going to go back and watch it. Nope. It just doesn't hit the same. Even if it's in the same writer, same kind of style of joke.
Yeah.
It's not.
Well, and it does, and you can't, like, I know that Mr. Rust is a huge Seinfeld fan. If they made Seinfeld now, you would try to watch it, yes? If they brought back the original cast. But the thing,
I open the box, I put it in the bowl. No grapes, no nuts.
But what would your expectation of that be?
Low.
Oh, would it really? Okay. Well, that's the way to set it.
Yeah. No, because, listen, reboots and those kinds of things after, you have to, it was like with the Dumb and Dumber sequel.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You have to set your sights low.
Yeah.
Happy Gilmore 2 coming out next weekend. My sights are
this
set low.
This weekend. Isn't
this
it the 25th?
It's in the 25th. Yes. Yeah. Friday night. Yeah. But Ooh. So it's, you know, if you, you have to have your expectations appropriately set.
I think
to
that's,
not let yourself down.
Well, I think that's a key to entertainment. And then the other thing, too, is I think we all need to get over the idea of you need to watch this movie because it's awesome and you've watched it 85 times. Trying to drag somebody along to something you loved when you were 18 and love now for nostalgic purposes.
Yep.
That don't work either.
Well, the biggest problem with that is that you oversell it.
Oh, always oversell.
Always oversell it. And it's usually something that has been around for decades, and it just doesn't quite translate anymore. And this is like with Dusty and Star Wars.
Yeah.
And you've never watched Star Wars, is this what I'm to understand?
I've watched the very first of the prequels.
The very first of the
I got through
prequels.
That. I got got through that a year or two years ago.
You know what's ironic about that is I grew up on Star Wars, obviously having a name like Luke, you have to watch the original Star Wars.
Well,
are you saying the prequels like the Anakin Skywalker?
Yeah, sure. Oh, the very first one is in the order because
in chronology,
episode 1, 2, 3.
Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah, Jar Jar Binks.
I used to put on Star Wars to when I had problems falling asleep. For whatever reason, the original Star Wars, I would put it on and just lights out, Dusty. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Everybody tells me, you're Luke. You have to be into Star Wars. My birthday is May 4th. May the 4th be with
you. Oh, there you go.
I know. It's just ruined on him.
Well,
I know. Well, I'm
ruined on him.
I'm sorry.
But here's what I'll tell you. I have never made it through the original prequel.
The
first prequel. I have not, that set of Star Wars movies I cannot watch. As soon as Jar Jar Binks gets on the screen, I'm out.
I'm still out. That's one of my I'm a Star Wars man.
Yeah.
Just I don't care which one it is.
You do not care.
That
terrible animation, the terrible voices.
Jar Jar Binks is awful, but I will still watch it.
All right. That's talking Star Wars here.
You will take the punishment.
Talking Star Wars. This texture, King of the Hill is coming back. Did you see that?
Well, minus John Redcorn.
John Redcorn died.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, he got
hard to bring people back from the dead.
Didn't Dale die too? And wasn't Brittany Murphy in that as well?
Yes, but she was replaced. I think like in the first run of that show as well.
Look,
although that might have been due to her untimely
King
demise.
Of the Hill. I think it might play.
Okay,
I think it might play now.
Well, how many times did Family Guy get canceled and come back?
Well, but I think with this King of the Hill reboot, though, they're doing it like modern times, so like Bobby's grown up and stuff.
Here's the thing. Huge Mike Judge fan with the movies Idiocracy and Office Space. Once upon a time, I could sit down and watch a Beavis and Butthead marathon.
Idiocracy, now a documentary.
Yes, it's very much... It's happening in real time. It's going to be like Back to the Future when you go, do you remember the day that they looked at in the future and how inaccurate it was? We're going to look at Idiocracy the opposite way and how accurate it was.
Just like Biff in Back to the Future. Awesome. Why don't you make like a tree and get your butt out of here?
Yeah.
Look at this one. I'm 40, saw Top Gun for the first time in 2020 at my wife's insistence, thought it was a pile of crap. The cliche storylines, lousy acting, much like most 80s movies. Golly!
Top Gun was the first cassette tape I ever owned, the Top Gun soundtrack.
Hell yeah, Kenny Loggins. And it had Otis Redding. That was actually a banger of a soundtrack.
Better soundtrack than movie.
Berlin, Take My Breath Away.
I would say that.
Really?
Oh yeah. I'm sorry. What'd you? I never liked that movie. Listen, it's fine. But
I think my brain exploded.
Really?
Yeah.
Kelly McGinnis. Tom Cruise shirtless.
Kelly McGillis.
McGillis. Sorry.
Thank you.
All right. You knew who I was talking about.
You are going to fire Rust up.
Have you not heard him? He is fired up already.
If you're going to talk ass, you best come correct.
Well, here's the thing. Still. Am I wrong?
Oh, man.
Yeah. And I'm sorry. Anthony Edwards as like your Air Force.
Oh, don't you go talking ass about Goose.
I'm out.
You're already out.
This show is done.
It's over. I did fall asleep for the second Top Gun, too. I did not make through that one either.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Put me right to sleep. It Star Wars me. I just, it put
just
me
right. Just put you right to sleep. Man,
I tried to watch it after Thanksgiving dinner last year.
Well,
so
that's the problem. Yeah. It's not the movie. It was the food and the gut.
The tryptophan guy.
I didn't go, oh, no, I fell asleep. I have to go rewatch it. I will tell you that. So you can go wherever you want with that.
Dude.
Do you have a movie that everybody loves that you hate?
Well, first off, Top Gun Maverick is actually superior to the original Top Gun.
Cool.
Let's just start there.
Yeah, sounds
I think what he great. Is saying is that the bar is very low on both of them, so he doesn't care.
Yeah.
Which, fair.
Yeah. Look. The new one is better than the one you didn't like. Okay, sure. Whatever.
His head is about to explode.
I know.
It's not good.
I'm trying
to get him to internalize. Is there anything, what's the thing that we could bring up? That you would go, yeah, no, everybody likes it, but it's
you just
nothing.
Did.
No, that's me. There's nothing in popular. You're just all in on pop culture. If everybody loves it, so does
everyone. Have you seen his t-shirt collection?
It's fantastic.
I feel like that's a bit of a stretch. I'm just all in on any sort of pop culture.
So what movie
I have my
is
corners.
It?
I have my niches.
Okay, what does a general, like Back to the Future or whatever that's universally appreciated, that we put you in a corner and you go, no, I can't do it. I won't.
Lord of the Rings.
Okay. Well, okay. Well, I'm not Lord of the Rings either.
Lord of the Rings.
With you. I'm
sorry. I love it. No, that's the first one that comes to my mind. They have great production value.
Yeah.
Truly treasured novels, and most people of that ilk love those movies. But Luke, like you said, if I need to go to sleep, I will turn on one of those.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Yeah, that's easier to sleep to than Maverick. Yeah, I can't. I'm with you on those.
I thought Russ was going to be like, why'd they have to do that to Rudy, dude? Like, why's Rudy in that movie? That's totally not Rudy, dude.
No, he's not Rudy. He's Mikey from the Goonies.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's Mikey. Who he truly is.
What's a movie with the river rafting? I was like that one.
There's Whitewater Summer. The River Wild. The River Wild.
Is he in both of those?
The River Wild was the one with Kevin Bacon and Meryl Streep, right?
Is Mikey in both of those?
No.
Yeah, because Brad Pitt's in The River Runs Through It, so The River Wild is the Kevin Bacon one.
Yeah. And there's Whitewater Summer with Sean Astin.
All right.
There we go.
I think we got that all figured out.
Boom.
Look at this.
Roasted.
Right. Well, there's a lot of people coming in with them. Inglourious Basterds is so boring to me, I don't get it.
Okay.
I love Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah.
I think it's a great movie.
It is a good movie, but it's not one that I can like sit down and watch like over and over again. For me, is one of those movies where you watch it once, maybe twice or three times, and you're good.
I was one and done on that. It's good. Never went back.
Good movie.
I like this one. My movie I hate that everyone loves, Gladiator. Part of it's because I'm a history junkie and it
inaccuracies.
All over the historical accuracies.
Sorry, I love that.
I watched an animated movie. So
he was not entertained.
There you go. Very good. My first paycheck that I got was as working for Will Vinton Studios, which was right down the street from where we are now. Mm-hmm. But I was I worked in the art department, and then I was an animator.
Has that changed to the Leica, or is that?
Yeah, well, kind of. Okay. Travis Knight. I worked with him at Will Vinton, and then he bought basically what was left over. They're way out in Hillsboro
now. Yeah.
So I don't think Leica was ever here, but a lot of the people that work there
are now. I appreciate somebody from Vancouver saying way out in Hillsboro.
It's way out there. So anyways,
18-minute drive.
I was watching some animated movie and I was watching my little cousins and like babysitting, and I was like this animation's terrible, and I can't remember what the movie was. And they come over and the parents come home and they go, how was the movie? How was everything? And they're like, well, the animation was weird because the guy's arms didn't move right. And then when they did different angles, it didn't transition well. And all I did was complain about the movie, and I ruined it for like an 8-year-old, a 6-year-old, and maybe a 10-year-old. So yeah, sitting there and being like a history buff and ruin. I just hope that if the movie was bad for you, I hope you didn't ruin it for everybody else and walk out of the theater and go, actually, in Roman times, and did it, because I did that once. So now anytime I catch inaccuracies, I just roll with
I
them.
I did do a spoiler on my way out of one of the Star Wars movies, the new ones.
A spoiler?
No.
Yeah. Oh, no.
So when people were like waiting in line.
I can't believe that Darth Vader's his
Christmas
dad.
Christmas Day. We went.
So you ruined a movie and Christmas?
Christmas Day.
Yes,
we went to one of those Star Wars movies. We're all in our pajamas and stuff. And right as I bust through the doors, walking outside to the parking lot, and I'm like, I can't believe they killed Han Solo. And the guy is like, thanks for ruining it for me.
I'm allowed to not like Top Gun, you jerk.
Look, I don't like Star Wars, but that is cruel.
Yeah.
Oh,
hey.
That is remarkable. That you would do that. Good job, man.
Look at you. Yeah.
So screw you, dude.
Screw you. I'm
glad I ruined that Star Wars movie for you. You wanted to see it sooner? You should have been there 2.5 hours earlier.
Some of us waited in line to get the tickets for the first show here at Christmas.
Get here in your PJs sooner, man.
Oh my gosh. I'm just picturing the dad yelling back at you and you not even noticing that the child behind him was crying.
Oh no, it was just some dude. He was by himself.
Oh sure.
No, he was by himself. He did not have anybody around him.
This
guy's alone on Christmas and you ruined the movie?
Yeah, he should have got there sooner.
The guy has no friends. He already has no friends.
On Christmas Day. Get there for the first show, dude.
Rust is sitting there. He's just gone.
Get there for the first show, dude. If you're that concerned about it. And you're growing up in mom's basement and waking up and getting out there and unwrapping your huffy bike.
I hope that guy's listening.
I hope he is too. My name is Jeff Rust.
Golly.
You know where to find me.
And I ruined Han Solo's death for you.
Boy, that got really aggressive really quickly.
Never change. Golly.
So I've learned I've learned something about my new producer. Don't piss him off.
Yeah. I don't think
I will spoil movies for your ass if I have to.
I guess it's not the worst you have.
Oh, man.
That's pretty good. Hey, you want to talk about what Dan Lanning said? Because
sure was a lot. Sure. His Q&A was fantastic.
There was a lot there. All right. So we'll dive into that. Dusty, join us for the bonus hour. This will be Ducks Insiders next week. So we'll talk Ducks. It's what we do. It is happy hour, bonus hour on 105.1 The Fan. That's right. It is bonus hour. If you ever walk into a movie and you see Jeff Rust walking your way,
just plug
your ears, man.
I'm going to tell you that Han Solo died.
And apparently don't wear pajama pants because that was triggering for him. He's like, you said pajama pants? I knew.
He should have woken up earlier. Go get a Red Bull, Dutch Brothers or something. Get in there sooner, dude. If you're that concerned about it.
Like that guy's just sitting there going, my wife just left me. The kids are with her. The only thing that's going to make me happy is a Star Wars. Oh, my God. This guy ruined it.
So he should have gotten up morning. Sooner.
Russ like be a better husband.
be a better son.
Well, the beautiful thing about sports is you can't really spoil it. You watch a live game, whatever's gonna happen. And the guys that are not spoiling anything is Coach Speak. Mm. Oh man. Okay, so
it's Coach Speak season.
It
unless you're Kurt Cignetti.
Well, yeah, but Kirk Signetti's trying to make a name for himself, right? He's trying to stand out because nobody knew who he was going into last year, right?
Last offseason, right? With the Google me bitch.
Dude, is Kirk Signetti the oldest person to try and make a name for himself?
Maybe. But that's why he has to do. That's why he has to go all in.
He's
right?
64 years old.
Yeah. Well, and he's
I didn't realize that.
But you coach at James Madison, and then you get the Indiana job. Nobody knows who you are. You have to kick the doors down.
Damn right.
And I think he gets that. That's what he's doing. Because Dabo used to do this, where he would just go and say the dumbest things, and everybody pay attention. Then he won a couple of national championships. You don't hear from him as much.
No,
he's still every once in a while. I mean, he can't completely shake the Dabo being Dabo, but it does not happen nearly as often. People know who he is. He can get good players. He's fine.
What's interesting about Dabo, though, is that he's gone from saying the things that made him endearing and that people like wanted to root for in like the good old boy who's just trying to make good in this big, big college football world to now he just shoves his foot in his mouth and everybody's like, you've got to be kidding
me.
You know, saying that the day that players get paid is the day I find a new job. Well, NIL comes.
Did not happen.
He just gets silent and then stays along. We're not going to dabble in the transfer portal. We got culture here.
Yep.
Well, and then he realizes, I can't win in this world of college football. So he starts dipping into the transfer portal. And it's interesting how people turn on you once you have that success.
Yeah, well, I don't even know that he's put his foot in his mouth. I think he was just trying to speak it into existence. I really think that he was like, you realize that if NIL becomes a thing, then everybody can pay, not just us. If people start going to the transfer portal, it's going to be a lot harder for me to win, who is really good at getting high school kids. I'm going to have to learn a new skill if these things come up. Dabo doesn't really want to do that. Okay, That's what I think it is.
Don't say things like, "Is the day they get paid is the day I find a new profession."
Yeah.
Because people don't forget.
Yeah, well, but here's the thing. Nobody's running him out of Clemson because he does keep winning and still making that university plenty of money.
Especially when you make $10 million a year.
Well, sure. But the fans can chirp all they want until the university presidents come over and go, "You said," and they have not done that. So I think he's safe. I always feel like that. Like when people, you know, will chirp on online about something. To pay $10 million to coach football, I don't think he's worried about it.
To be fair with Dabo, you know, you can say he keeps winning.
He was in the college football playoff last year.
2018 was the last title. He won him in 2016 and 2018.
He was in the college football playoff last year. So he's winning.
But here's the thing. He does win, and it's really damn hard to win a national championship in college football.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, just the list is very short of those guys who have done it over the last 20 years. You know, 2018, look, if you were to tell 99% of the college football fan bases that, hey, you would get a national championship in the last 7 years, I think a lot of people would say, I'll take it.
Yeah.
I will take it.
Well, and he won two championships in the Nick Saban era of college football.
Not bad.
Pretty good.
Not bad.
Pretty good. So he's got some job security. He was in the college football playoff last year. And like I said, until the university presidents come knocking and going, hey, we're keeping receipts on all those dumb things you say, they don't care.
No doubt about it.
They do not care. Speaking of coach speak, Dan Lanning getting pretty good at just sticking to the script. Did you hear anything of value from his opening remarks or the Q&A?
The Q&A was great because the first question he just answered, yeah. I mean, and this is the thing. Like, Lanning is the example of what we're talking about where you got Dabos out there who will give you something or Kurt Cignetti who will give you something. So I don't blame coaches for not going out and saying too much is because people will remember it. You know, Dabo said that, you know, 8 or 9 years ago. The day they get paid is the day I find a new job, and we still talk about it now.
Well, and anytime, what's his name at OK?
Mike Gundy.
Mike Gundy. I was going to say Gunther, but I knew that wasn't it. Mike Gundy. Yeah. He's always giving you something fun to talk about.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. But last year wasn't a great year for him. No.
Keep that quiet.
And so he did not give much of value. I mean, they gained a lot of weight.
He just comes in with the numbers. I love that they track that, showing how detail-oriented they are. The funny thing is Dan Lanning is willing to give everybody ammo during the season. During the offseason and recruiting, he's not afraid to go out there and, you know, do something ridiculous and do whatever it takes to do that and talk during that. But last year at Michigan, making sure that are you not entertained and all of these things, he's happy with those getting out. Does it feel like he's talking more to future players than he is to the media or the rest of the Big Ten?
I think what he does is nothing that he is saying is leading up to the event, right? We learn about the Michigan stuff after the Michigan game is over. We learn about the Colorado stuff. They're playing for clicks and we're playing for wins after they play Colorado, right?
Yeah.
Or actually right before kickoff when that video gets put on TV.
But it's nothing Colorado's going to see before the game.
Before the game. Yeah. And so everything is kind of after the fact. And, you know, those schools aren't going to forget that. He knows that he wouldn't forget that if, you know, those sorts of things were happening and they were on the other side of it. But it's also, you know, that team and what they did, it's in the rearview mirror and they're looking forward. And that's kind of how he goes about everything. And that whole looking forward thing, you said they track everything. They absolutely track everything.
Yeah.
I mean, from the way that those guys lift weights to every guy has an iPad that's put up on the lifting racks to where it's down to the pound on what you should be lifting, how many reps you should be doing. We're going to track your diet. We're going to track how much weight you're gaining. They have, you know, all of those guys, we see them, sometimes they look like sports bras, but every player now in like college football has tracking data where it's like a little chip that they put in the back of your jersey. There's guys like scanning the field and getting live updates on, you know, does this guy need a break or a breather because, you know, he's not running at his max speed. Like the numbers game in the world of college football is crazy on how much they're tracking pounds they're gaining and losing, how fast they are, you know, their explosive rates, all of that stuff in the world of college football. That element of science has become how these programs operate in the offseason.
It feels like you hear more about it in college football. Does all that translate to the pros? Are they doing the same thing at that level?
They are.
And is it more intense or just about the same?
I think it's about the same, maybe even like a little more intense in the NFL. I don't know if you saw like any of the stuff. The Browns put out a couple videos about this. The Giants put out a video about it. But like you go in and when you get fitted for your cleats now in the NFL, they have you stand on this like a sensory board. And it takes a scan of the bottom of your feet where you distribute your weight. And then that's how they start narrowing down the types of cleats that you should be wearing. And then they say, all right, you get these. And then they have insoles for them. Like,
sure.
It's so granular now. I mean, we're not really seeing injuries going down, so I'm not quite sure how effective these are.
But it's more about performance than it is injury prevention right now, isn't it?
No doubt about it. It's can you be good when you're there?
Yeah. Oh, you know? Man, absolutely wild. One thing that I'm hearing people talk about, and I guess it wasn't really addressed, is there a quarterback controversy at Oregon? I don't know. I'll ask you, but we'll do it next. First, SportsCenter update. Here's Rust. I remember the start of the Dan Lanning era at Georgia. Neutral site in Atlanta against Georgia.
I was there. I promise you, there was nothing neutral about that site.
I very much know. But it also wasn't at Georgia. It wasn't between the hedges. But in Atlanta against Georgia to launch the Dan Lanning era. And I remember everybody being very excited about the running back room and all the returning guys for Oregon and how excited everybody was. And then it was Bucky Irving and Noah Whittingham, and nobody knew who they were. You probably had a little more insight, but I think as fans, we're like, wait, who are these guys? Transferred from where? Doing what?
By the way, the drive from Athens to Atlanta is about the same as the drive from here to the coast.
not even to Eugene.
Hour 42 minutes.
Yeah. Well, and just think of like a lot of the folks that go to Athens on game day, they don't live there.
Oh, no. Absolutely. No, they drive from Atlanta. Yeah. They're like, cool, I don't have to make the hour and 42 minutes drive. But I just remember being surprised where Dan Lanning came out. It wasn't what you expected. I think a lot of us were expecting Dante Moore to be the incumbent. Starting to hear some rumors that maybe there's a possibility that the freshman comes in and plays some quarterback. Are you hearing anything about that?
This year? Look, there is... no spots are given out. And like, this is one of the things that like Pete Carroll always used to have: compete,
yep.
Right? And there was no secret that there were guys that were protected in that. And at Oregon, obviously guys like Bryce Betcher and Mateo Uyunglele, Tatum Tuioti, you know, Poncho Laulu, those guys are going to get their, they're going to get their snaps and a lot of them. But everything else, there is competition. And look, from when you go from Bo Nix, the Dylan Gabriel, we talked about this yesterday, Dylan Gabriel was that perfect kind of bridge quarterback. That quarterback room, man, is Dante Moore looked really damn good in the spring. Yep. And he looked great in the spring game. And he has taken ownership and leadership of that quarterback room. But there's differing styles in that room, where you have Dante Moore, who is more athletic, and he does have starting experience at the FBS level, however you want to view how that win at UCLA. Look at the team around him.
Yep.
Austin Novosad, though, was a guy that he was recruited by Will Stein out of high school. He's from Dripping Springs, Texas. And Will Stein, when he was at Texas San Antonio, was recruiting Austin Novosad. Stein gets a job up at Oregon when Kenny Dillingham goes to Arizona State. And he was like, we don't got a quarterback this year. I got a guy.
Yeah.
And Novosad comes in, and he is, man, he's like the prototype quarterback.
Okay.
Right?
So what, 6'3", 220? Dante Moore is what, 5'11"?
I think Dante's taller than that.
Okay.
I think he's a little bit taller than that.
Okay.
But
they're both taller than Dylan Gabriel.
Yes. But he is more of the presence pocket quarterback. and he is wickedly smart, mechanically looks very sound. But we just haven't seen very much of him. We saw both of them sparingly last year. And when you see that Dante Moore was the guy who was always standing behind Dylan Gabriel, and Dylan Gabriel was grooming him, and we've heard, you know, they were roommates on the road and all that stuff. You know, it was this get. And what's crazy about it is that that's what everybody thought Dylan Gabriel was going to be at Oklahoma, was grooming the next great Oklahoma quarterback. And it didn't work out well for Oklahoma, but Dylan Gabriel bought into that role at Oregon, and Dante Moore bought into what Dylan Gabriel was teaching him throughout all of last year. But Novosad has got a skill set that is ridiculous. If anybody watched a spring game, Luke Moga, who was the freshman, true freshman last year out of Arizona, his speed and his burst to get to the corner and create big runs and create extra time in the pocket, he is an electrifying quarterback.
Yeah.
Akili Smith Jr. comes in, an early enrollee, and a familiar name. And that dude does not look like he was in high school this past year. He looks like a grown-ass man.
Yeah.
But you have those three guys, guys specifically.
Real quick, I checked. ESPN has Dante Moore at 6'3 as well.
6'3?
So, he's quite a bit taller than I thought.
Now, I don't know if he's that tall.
Well,
but
hey,
he is. Somewhere in the middle.
Somewhere between there. Okay.
Yeah. But you've got varying styles of quarterbacks and at different years. So you have four guys that are there that you sit there and you say, all right, let's see where the dust settles. I don't think it'll be Akili Smith Jr. this year because you've got so much ground to make up. There is so much validity to the more you see as a quarterback and you grow.
Yeah.
Right?
The game slows down. Live bullets make a big difference being out there and just getting the reps. And that's really what the Oregon quarterback room has had for the last couple of years. You have Bo Nix, who has more starts than anybody in college football history. Then he's eclipsed by Dylan Gabriel the next year. So especially with those COVID years, you've gotten really used to guys having seen just about everything college football has to offer from a defensive look standpoint, and now you're going into something where Dante Moore has some experience, nobody else has any, so it's back to that.
And he
let's see what we have for talent.
A mastery of the system.
Yeah.
Like, I think if you were to look at it on the surface, you go, yes, Dante Moore appears to be the guy, but would I be completely stunned if Austin Novosad is a starter week one? No, but you know, that's not that anybody's told me anything about that.
Yeah.
It's just we got to see how camp goes and what that looks like. I mean, this is the thing. Bo Nix was brought into Oregon to be the starter. Dylan Gabriel was brought in to be the starter. Dante Moore was brought in to be this year's starter. And so I think that's where people kind of see that, where he was a commit to Oregon. He flips and he goes to UCLA. He plays for a year, comes back in red shirts, and he redshirted so he could master the system, learn from Gabriel, and have a running start heading into this year.
So he's as a sophomore, he has potential to be there for 3 years as the starter. That's not something we've seen for a long time, where you have that much runway for a starting quarterback. So could be great.
Yeah, I think that anybody trying to make it a quarterback controversy, I don't think there's a controversy about it. I think they're just trying to figure out who's going to be the best to run this offense, because also this offense is going to look so different than it has in different iterations under Dan Lanning's stewardship. You have Kenny Dillingham and Will Stein. You had a coordinator change from year one to Bo Nix to year two with Bo Nix. Yep. You have a brand new quarterback in Dylan Gabriel in Stein's second year. So you have two different systems in the three seasons he's been the head coach. And you've had quarterbacks learning a new system every time. I think that is a really big advantage, right?
Yeah.
And also with those system changes, you had receiver rooms that were more established than they are right now. That's not to say that they don't have good receivers this year, because I think DeCorey Moore is going to be really damn good. Yeah. He's got that it factor, and he is special. We've seen guys like Justice Lowe last year played a really big role for Oregon, especially when Tez Johnson got hurt last year. Gary Bryant Jr. appears to be healthy. Kyler Casper, he is a big body outside target, and he had gotten run last year. Malik Benson, the Florida State transfer, comes in, who Bama, Florida State, now Oregon, looking to pop. Jeremiah McClellan, who was a highly touted recruit last year, he's got a year to grow and learn the system. It's not that they don't have athletic guys in there, but it's not Trayshawn Holden, Evan Stewart, Tez Johnson, especially last year, and Terrence Ferguson, too. Like, T-Ferg was an animal out there. The receiver room is different, and that may change how you look at, all right, which quarterback is the one that fits us best, right? Yeah. If you have a running back room that's loaded and a receiver room that is needs a little bit to prove, I don't know if they are dead set on who it's going to be. I think it's going to be Dante Moore. I think we all think it's going to be Dante Moore.
Okay.
But fall camp starts, what, next week? We're going to find out a whole heck of a lot more then.
Well, it'll be very, very exciting. The biggest news coming out of Big Ten Media Day really seems to be just how disgruntled everybody was yesterday with the way the schedules shake out. Everybody keeps complaining about the SEC. Why don't we just start copying the SEC? If everybody's so upset about it, would it be a bad thing if the Big Ten, instead of trying to drag along the SEC, went that direction? We'll talk about that. Next, it is one more segment of the bonus hour on the Happy Hour on 105.1, or 105.1.
You got it.
I got it.
You got it.
Right.
You did it.
Playing my jam here. Go, ODB.
This was the soundtrack of Bullworth.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Good old.
This song was made for
the Warren Beatty vehicle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Terrible movie. Great song.
Awful movie.
Awful movie. Great song.
Yeah.
I just wonder what happened to Maya. Big fan of hers.
Boy, I always say things like that with an abundance of caution because of how many young, talented artists were exploited back then, you know?
That's a fair point.
I mean, the 90s record industry, not the kindest.
Yeah, is there any trials going on that reflect that?
A few.
I don't know. Did he do it?
Well, I'm sure Patrick Harris has talked about this. P. Diddy was his moniker for just about everything.
Yeah, he dropped that a while back. Yeah,
oh, no, I know.
I think it was a timely choice. He did it, I think, before even all that stuff. And
he's like, I'm going to go ahead and just remove this.
Let's just not do that anymore.
Big talk from Big Ten Media Days. It's not a media week. It's not a media day. It is media days. I guess not just Big Ten. ACC is sniping, the Big 12 is sniping, the Big Ten, the SEC. The Pac-12 used to do this, and it would drive me crazy about the complaint about the SEC schedule. They only play 8 conference games. They set up and play a patsy before the rivalry game. We talked about this a little bit yesterday, that you and I should take over scheduling.
That's
right. You're going to be more expensive. I will be, I think, fairly reasonable. Rust is very cheap. Somebody put him in charge of scheduling. We can figure it out. But Kurt Cignetti and others have all said, let's go, we like to play a 9-game schedule. Why? If the SEC is only going to play 8 games, and we're all going to complain about it, and the SEC seems to be having postseason success, they've won their fair share of championships lately, what is it about the 9-game conference schedule that makes any difference for parity or fairness of play when you have 18 teams in your conference? Where is the hangup? The Pac-12 drove me crazy because that was, I think, the most balanced conference. A lot of talk about who's top heavy and who's deep.
Right.
The Pac-12, I always thought, was the deepest 1-12. But then they'd play the 9 games, and inevitably Arizona State and Jaden Daniels would chuck a bomb down the sideline that would end the Ducks' run for a chance to get into the 4-team playoff or the BCS title game. That 9th game is the one that catches people off guard.
Well, and this is where the 9th game is important, is because the SEC, they say the depth of the conference is what makes it different. And there's no easy week in SEC play. And it bears out over the course of the season where at the end of the year, you have 9-10 SEC teams that are ranked. Well, if you play one more conference game and you're not playing the Citadel in November, then that's one loss for half of your league.
Uh-huh.
And that then puts a chink in the armor of our conference is so deep and you have no easy path. The reality of the SEC is that, and I think it was Cignetti that said this yesterday,
yeah,
that there have only been six teams since 1964 that have won that conference.
I think that might have been a shot from the ACC. Somebody at SMU might have said either.
Yeah, Rhett Lashley.
There you go.
Rhett Lashley at SMU said it.
Together we have one.
We got it.
Yeah.
But the reality is that the conferences that play nine conference games, they've got ditch diggers.
100%. Fine, and I'm
so
with
does
that.
So does the SEC.
Yeah,
but a lot of them are protected by the eight conference games.
So,
right.
So again, and why do we keep dying on this hill of we liked like this was Cignetti saying, yeah, or no, I guess it was
Cignetti said that he wants to do it like the SEC and schedule cupcakes in the non-conference.
He eliminated the Virginia game that was supposed to be played at the beginning of their season, because why would I play an extra FCS opponent or FBS opponent if I don't have to? A Power Five team seems pointless to schedule that game. And then you had everything from the Big Ten commissioner coming out about, you know, if we go 8-4 and a team goes 6-3 and you drop one of the whatever.
Okay.
We're all complaining about the SEC. I don't think anything you said is wrong, that the schedule does become easier by only playing eight games. The Pac-12 for the entire history of being 12 teams complained about this. Now the Big Ten is complaining about it. If we're all complaining about it, why don't we just switch to eight games?
Because, and the thing is, the SEC says, well, guess what? Look, in our other non-conference games, we always schedule a Power Four conference team. Hang on.
I'm with you.
I'm almost there.
No,
I'm
with
there.
You.
We always schedule a Power Four conference team. That's a part of our non-conference schedule. Well, guess what? You are also on the opposite end of that other Power Four team's non-conference schedule, who plays nine GD conference games.
Yeah, so there's at least 10 Power Four conference games.
Right.
Yeah.
So it just look, if it just means more down there, play another GD conference game.
I get that, but screaming at the SEC, who's sitting up there just going, dude, this is like, you can yell at us all you want. Our eight-game conference schedule is working. You were all mad.
Yeah, it's
you
working for you. It's well, working sure. for you. And okay. that's why,
so
and
again,
that's why,
so
and that's why the SEC is the big
so
bad
explain
brain
to me,
of everything.
Explain to me why the Big Ten doesn't play eight games.
Okay, and I have, like, what you're saying is right, Rust, and that is, there's a legitimate complaint there. But I think the hang-up that every other conference has is that you want to play a rotation where you will see the Big Ten is massive now. Right?
It is.
You look at how many teams are in that conference. You want to, all the other conferences say, well, we want to be able to play, you know, Ohio State, Oregon, Michigan, Penn State on a rotation that doesn't take a decade. And this is like the reality of the SEC, is that you will go a decade without playing a team in your conference on the road.
And that was going to be my next point, is that they protect their big teams by not scheduling them against the number 3, 4, 5 team in the conference.
Well, they do that, but they also throw teams like Florida to the wolves.
Yes,
right? They will just say, well, got sacrificial lamb this year. And like Diego Pavia, the Vanderbilt quarterback, that said, you know, you want to play the best, there's no easy outs. Well, yeah, because your team sucks.
You are the easy out.
Right?
your schedule gets harder the worse you are. When everybody you play is better than you, that means you're not very good.
Right. And they had a good year last year.
They did.
And they beat Bama.
And Diego Pavia is as much fun to watch as any quarterback in college
absolutely
football.
He is
great.
But this is where the SEC, they kind of control all the cards in this regard, is that, look, half of your league has one fewer loss because of the way they schedule.
Sure.
And teams like Kentucky, that Power Five team or Power Four team that they play every year is Louisville.
Yep. They're doo-doo.
Right? They're playing Louisville, which they do protect themselves with. The big brands will go and they will play big non-conference games.
They're doo-doo also.
The lesser teams, they don't play, you know, unbelievable teams, and they pick up wins against other Power Four conferences. I don't have an issue with what the SEC does.
Neither do I, but there are so many gripes out there, Jeff Rust included.
I do.
Everybody you listen to. So again, instead of complaining about it, if you can't beat them,
join them. Right?
This would be like the New York Yankees saying, "Hey, guess what? we don't need to play the rest of the AL East as much as everybody else plays their own division opponents.
Well, the dumbest thing in college football, and we talked about this yesterday, the dumbest thing in college football is that the school themselves is in charge of their schedule.
But
the fact that Kurt Cignetti can adjust his schedule so he doesn't have to play somebody difficult in the non-conference.
I don't disagree with that.
The conference hands you your schedule for the conference, and then you get to pick who you play in the other games? How moronic is
but
that?
But this is where, and this is the issue that college football is in right now. The SEC, it is the best conference. Like, we can agree, like, they, look at the teams that have won national titles.
Yep.
It is like they win, and they're the top of their league is incredible. They don't want to hurt the perception of it, and they get a ton of teams ranked yep. in the preseason and the postseason polls because half their league will have one less loss.
Yep.
Right. But if college football, now we're in this fight, it's not just scheduling. The reason why they're bringing up scheduling is because they're fighting over a playoff format.
Yep.
And that playoff format needs to have a regulated schedule.
It does.
And that is the biggest thing. The Big Ten and the SEC, they need to play each other every year. The ACC and the Big 12, they have got to play each other every single year.
So drop one conference game and play an extra non-conference
and
game.
That
would be great.
Or have everybody play nine and say your three non-con games, one of them will be against an SEC team. Another one is going to be against an ACC or a Big 12 team,
yep.
and you can just flip-flop them yep. back and forth every year. One year, the Big 12 plays the Big 10, ACC plays the SEC, and then the next year, you flip it. And then that third game, you are playing a group of five team.
Portland right? State. No, Sisters of the Poor.
No, I'm saying a group of five or a group of six team.
Okay.
Now it's because...
Well, and there's the argument that the smaller programs like Portland State and Eastern Washington don't survive without the money they get from those games. Everybody has one.
But here's the deal.
Pick your stepchild.
That payday for the power, or if you go eight games, conference yep. games, then you have four non-cons That's and you it. Can play in FCS.
Yep. There you go.
But if you go to nine, which I do like because everybody will play each other on a rotation more.
Sure.
Okay. If you do that, then that payday to the group of five school or group of six school is going to be a little bit more, and those group of six schools can then go and play the FCS teams.
Yeah.
And you have like a trickle up, right, yeah. where they can still get the funding. That payday is going to be a little bit higher, so they can then hand that down right on down to the FCS. Well,
I don't disagree with anything that has been said here yeah. about trying to get the SEC to change to what everybody else is doing, but it ain't going to happen.
Ain't going to happen,
So instead
dude.
Of...
Until they're forced to.
Well, again, but who's going to force them to?
Hopefully so, the new until, governing body.
Until they do, wouldn't you rather have the rotation be that you get a Big Ten team playing an SEC team more often?
Yes.
Or an ACC team? These games that you never see, instead of them going, well, we got to play Northwestern this year.
Well, then have them all play eight.
Yeah. Everybody just play eight.
And then you say, well,
don't complain that what they're doing if you're not like
tradition.
See, look, it all comes back to let's just have everything uniform and everybody play the same amount of conference games.
But if you don't
care if it's eight or nine,
if you
just
don't
pick one.
If you don't like what everybody else is doing and they're not going to change what you do. All right, we got to get to happy hour. Dusty, thank you for sticking around. We'll get to the regular hour. Woo. We'll do it next. It is 105.1 The Fan and the Fan Sports Network.